World War One on the BBC.
I'm not a criminal because I destroyed what was evil. I think I'm good.
The only idea was to shoot him.
It was. Did you feel like you were shooting someone?
Yes. Yes. And I was very happy when he fell. And you know that he said, and he repeated four times, I'm okay. I'm okay.
He who wants to live has to die.
News have just arrived in Vienna. The hereditary Archduke of Austria and his wife have today been assassinated at Sarajevo by a student belonging to Grahovo.
He who is ready to die will live forever.
Gavrilo Princip, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, Sarajevo, bridge, bang! And cue the First World War. We all know that, more or less. What we don't think about is how those shots have echoed through the Balkans.
You can tell the story of the wars of the 90s through your attitude towards Princip.
A century on, after two more wars in his homeland, Princip's act is more freighted than ever with contradictory meanings.
For me, he was a hero, but he was at the same time a terrorist.
The courageous Ahanata for tyranny, let the ones who live die and the ones who die live.
Gavrilo Princip for us today is so important because he was a dreamer, young dreamer. And we lost people with dreams. We killed them.
Gavrilo Princip, Gavrilo Princip.
For decades, a pair of footprints marked the corner where Princip fired his shots. A place to contemplate destiny, chance, liberation, or violence. Or just to feel the frisson of history through your souls. They vanished in the early 90s, when Sarajevo was encircled in a four-year siege. All this week, as Europe has descended on the city for the centenary, Princip has been an absent guest, the dark ghost at the feast. But then history has never known quite what to do with him.
I like to quote Friedrich Nietzsche, we have no facts, we have only different interpretations.
Predrag Finzi has spent a lifetime as a professor of philosophy. He was also Gavrilo Princip in the first ever Yugoslav film of the assassination.
It is very difficult to understand that event if you don't put the event into proper historical context. And the context explains the situation.
I don't feel like a criminal because I disposed of the one who was doing evil.
Everything in history is very complex, even one human. For example, Princip.
Dubravka Stojanovic is a historian at the University of Belgrade. She studied the uses and abuses of the past in former Yugoslavia.
He was a Yugoslav, and he was the anarchist, and he was inspired by many other assassinations of the 19th century, and it was very fashionable at the time. And he wanted to be a hero, but he was also misused by Serbian nationalists, and they were the ones who trained him, and they were the ones who organized his trip from Belgrade to Sarajevo, and who gave him the arms. And he himself, he said that he was Yugoslav. He wanted to make something great for the liberation of his people, but he started the worst tragedy the world ever knew. And he was understood from the Serbian side as a hero, but he was understood by Croats or Austrians as a murderer. From one man and one situation, you can say completely controversial and contradictory things within the same sentence.
The young chap who triggered the First World War didn't know consequences, and Ferdinand also didn't know consequences. So I believe they both were cameo roles in that big play of history.
Princip has played many roles over the decades. There's folk Princip, rap Princip, dreadlocked Princip, and pale, tragic, boyish Princip, forever fixed in the mugshot from his arrest. We came across that one in a part of Belgrade where many Serb refugees from ex-Yugoslavia live.
We're in Zemun, it's a working-class suburb, some tall blocks of flats, some old houses, and on the side of a shop selling paint and spackle and grout is a black-and-white mural of Gavrilo Princip done by some local kids with very sad eyes. His head is about as tall as I am, and above the mural are two lines of poetry that were found on his cell wall in Theresienstadt after he died, which mean, our ghosts will walk through Vienna and roam through the palace, frightening the lords.
Gavrilo, Gavrilo.
Of the real Princip, little remains. A handful of photographs, his statements at his trial, scrawls from his dying days in the fortress of Theresienstadt, and some purple prose from his youth.
The wet logs on the open fire gave the only light to the closely packed villagers and their wives, wrapped in thick smoke. The most that I could see were the eyes of the human beings, numerous, sad, and glaring with some kind of fluid light coming from nowhere. Many times since, they have awakened me from my dreams.
He was born in Obljaj, a mountain village near the Croatian border. Vladimir Mitic is descended from Princip's mother's family.
Everything I know about these ancient times, I know from my father's tales about his childhood. Nearly all of them were shepherds. Gavrilo, he was 17, 18, nearly a man. And he came on summers. He used to stand in front of children and he tried to speak them about the question of nation, of national freedom. It's a very important thing. Of course, for children of 10 years, it's for nothing. They do not know what are they. But he used to speak them about this.
To the children.
And 11, 12 years.
Bosnia is a tear in the eye of Serbia.
The boy preaching national awakening in the mountains had already gone far from home. He'd been sent to school in the big city, Sarajevo. Once part of the Ottoman world, Bosnia was now a backwater of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which had first occupied it and then annexed it in 1908. Its neighbour, Serbia, was independent, a beacon for the South Slavs, and by the end of the Balkan Wars, Austria-Hungary saw Serbia as a dangerous rival. In the empire's provincial towns, young Bosnians like Princip were dreaming of revolution. Writer and historian Muharrem Bazdulje.
At that time, you had first generation of boys, basically, born in the new context, who are now in their teenage years, basically, who started to feel that the only way to South Slavs to stop being some sort of colony was to unite.
The people live in poverty. They're treated like cattle. I'm the son of a peasant, and I know what life is like in the villages.
It's pretty ironic when you look at it that their intention to unite South Slavs was in a way product of their Austro-Hungarian education. Austria gave them what they needed to destroy it.
I would say most of them were intellectuals or aspiring intellectuals.
Historian Dejan Jokic.
Everybody wanted to become a philosopher, a poet, a writer. It's a heterogeneous group that is loosely connected under this network called Young Bosnia. They were actually influenced very much by the Young Italy movement, also Young Ireland, Young Germany, Polish nationalism. You had all these nationalist movements fighting for the creation of nation states on the territory of various empires. There were some of the Republicans, anarchists, some were possibly royalists.
Atheists, mostly?
Yes.
We are in an old neighbourhood of Belgrade with Muharrem Bazdulje, and in this neighbourhood, Gavrilo Princip and his Bosnian friends all stayed when they came to Belgrade to finish school in 1912.
They often, kiss the ground. They feel like they're on place where they can talk freely, act freely. You know, I must be totally personal, there's this song by Bruce Springsteen I really like called Out in the Streets, and he said, when I'm on the street, I talk the way I want to talk, I walk the way I want to walk.
They must have been quite lonely. There's a bunch of boys, no women,
no mothers, no sisters,
no money, and you can see how you would get into this kind of fantasy life.
You're totally right. You know, if you had, let's say, four of them in one room, they often have two pair of shoes, and they even can't all of them go outside in the same time, you know. One of the things that is often forgotten is this feeling of poverty and of social inferiority. When you look at a generation of his parents, it is feudalism. It's not two worlds, it's not two epochs, it's two planets, basically. Yeah.
So for these boys, they'd left the past that they grew up with.
Of course.
But there was no evident future for them to live in their new selves.
Of course. It's you without calculation. They didn't think of Franz Ferdinand as a human being, only as a function of empire. I'm not that sure how much they believed that they would succeed.
Wherever I went, people took me for a weakling, indeed for a man who would be completely ruined by a moderate study of literature. And I pretended I was a weak person, even though I was not. Gavrilo Princip, Gavrilo Princip.
That park we were sitting in was where Gavrilo and his friend Nedeljko Chabrinovich first plotted to assassinate the Archduke Franz Ferdinand. They'd learned that he was going to Sarajevo on Vidovdan, the ancient day they'd heard sung about since childhood as the anniversary of Serbia's heroic defeat at Kosovo. But a killing needed guns and money and training and practical help. They sought out the Black Hand, a semi-secret military society working for a greater Serbia, often in direct conflict with the civilian authorities. Dubravka Stojanovic.
They were the organizers of the overthrow of the previous Obrenović dynasty. And they were very wise on the day after the murder, because they said, okay, we've murdered the king and the queen, but now let's call the assembly to vote for the new king and the new dynasty, and we are giving the power back to the civilian government. From that moment, they were the key players. Everybody knew that they were the ones who decided upon every important issue in Serbia.
At the center of that web was Dragutin Dimitrijević, Apis, a colonel in the Serbian army who had personally plotted the deaths of King Alexander and Queen Draga in 1903. A photograph shows him glowering at the camera from behind an important desk, pen poised, phone at his elbow. Historian James Lyon.
He was an enormous man. Balding, he took to shaving his head.
And how did he come to be called Apis?
After Apis, the Mithraic bull, I believe it was. So he was known as the bull. By 1914, he had been actively opposing the government, had been working for years to bring down the government. It appears that his efforts to assist this group of Bosnians was one of the things he hoped would create a sufficient scandal that it would pour down international condemnation upon Nikola Pašić's government and lead to Pašić's resignation.
What I think is unlikely is that they recruited these untrained students who didn't know how to use weapons maybe a few weeks before the assassination. They approached Black Hand, and after a while Apis said, okay, sure, okay, if you want to do it, we'll give you some weapons and training, but that's probably besides the point. Yeah. The Serbian government is not behind this. However, the Serbian government does hear rumors that something is happening, probably in early June. Okay, if the Serbian government heard these rumors, did it actually warn the Austro-Hungarians? And if not, why not? The government feared that Austro-Hungary was seeking an excuse to attack Serbia anyway. Now, a warning of sorts apparently was delivered, but unofficially.
When it turned dark, we crossed the border. Grabez and I carried arms. The weather was damp, and we wandered across several fields. Then we turned towards some woods, and we hardly came out of them because it was dark, and we passed the night in a hut on the edge of the forest.
The Black Hand armed Princip and his friends and helped them enter Bosnia. The intent was there, and the determination. But without an unlikely cocktail of luck and amazing ineptitude on the part of local officials, what the Austrians called Schlaumerei, the sequence of events that's been endlessly replayed, that's marked Sarajevo forever, would never have taken place. Director Haris Pasovic.
Passing by, I would say, oh, here is the place where Gavrilo Princip killed Ferdinand.
He passed along a wide street, one side of which is a wall and the river Miljetze. There are three bridges by which he could cross the river.
Five conspirators were waiting for him near the first bridge.
He who wants to live has to die.
One of the conspirators threw a bomb. It bounced off the Archduke's car and wounded several spectators.
He who is ready to die will live forever.
Then the Archduke decided to visit his wounded aide-de-camp at the hospital, and the Duchess declared she would go with him. They set off again, but the driver of the car made a mistake. Instead of driving straight over the bridge, he made a turn to the right.
I recognized the Archduke. When I saw that a lady was sitting next to him, I paused for a moment. Should I shoot or not? And then I was filled with a peculiar feeling. I aimed at the Archduke from the pavement. I even looked away as I shot. But I know I aimed at the Archduke. I think I fired twice, maybe more. Whether I hit them or not, I can't tell, because people started to beat me.
My grandfather once in passing told me, oh yeah, I heard the shot that Gavrilo shot. He ran out and he saw the crowd and, you know, mayhem and police and everything.
They were taken at once to the Konak, or official residence. The Duchess was dead before they reached there, and Franz Ferdinand died in about 10 minutes.
was just 11 o'clock.
When those shots were fired, the wave of history broke. The ideas that inspired Princip didn't matter anymore. He said he was a Yugoslav, not a Serb nationalist. But the city of Sarajevo and the assassin's image suddenly seemed to fracture along ethnic lines. Predrag Finci is Croatian on his mother's side and Jewish on his father's.
The day when Princip shot Ferdinand, my grandmother, when she heard, because she was very pro-Austro-Hungarian oriented, yes, and she said, shame on you, how can you do that? She said, that day we hated Serbs and we started to throw stones on Serbs. And I was shocked because I was born in that concept of equality. And then I understood that reactions after the assassination of Ferdinand were immediately of that sort, that separation was immediately present in Bosnia. That my grandmother was on one side, on the opposite side of Serbs.
Our ghosts will walk through Vienna and roam through the palace, frightening the lords.
The Great War began with the shelling of Belgrade. The conflict tore the South Slavs apart. Bosnia had to fight on the Austro-Hungarian side. During the war, to remind Sarajevans of their sins, a 12-metre-high monument was raised by the Latin Bridge to the Archduke and his wife. By the time it was all over, Princip himself was dead and buried in an unmarked grave in the Terezinstadt fortress, his body rotted away by tuberculosis. Serbia too was gone, and the Austro-Hungarian Empire. The new kingdom of Serbs, Croats and Slovenes immediately dismantled the Archduke's monument, but could find no way to mark the memory of Gavrilo.
In First Yugoslavian Kingdom of Yugoslavia, since the First World War was so controversial among different Yugoslav peoples, so of course Slovenes, Croats and Bosniaks were fighting on the Austro-Hungarian side against Serbia. That was a controversial event, so they did not want to insist too much on Princip. And they did not want to insist too much on the First World War because Yugoslavia was a reconciliation country. So that was, again, a gray zone of history. So, of course, we were fighting for Yugoslavia. Princip was fighting for Yugoslavia. But let's not talk too much about it. But he was a hero.
So it's a rainy afternoon in Sarajevo, and we're by a motorway overpass in the cemetery. We've just asked a couple of people outside if they know where the grave of Gavrilo Princip is, and they had no idea what we're talking about. But it's right here. They brought him back in 1920. The bones were brought back because a Czech guard at Terezinstadt had remembered where Princip was buried, and he survived the war, and he sympathised with the national aspirations of his Slav brothers, and he informed the Czechoslovakian consulate in Zagreb, and he was rewarded with 3,000 Bosnian cigarettes.
According to a couple of accounts, there's a huge crowd at the train station, and as the train passes through Bosnia, all sorts of people turn out, peasants turn out, and are kissing the coffins.
Historian Paul Miller has traced Princip's memory through Yugoslavia's past.
But it's hard to really estimate that, because at the same time, we have accounts just 6 years earlier in 1914 of the Archduke and his wife being transported from Sarajevo back towards Vienna through Bosnia and all sorts of people turning out to pay their respects. But nonetheless, there is accounts of his reception at the train station. There is a reburial process, but the government does not take part in this at all.
When they brought Princip's bones back in 1920, there was no big ceremony or anything, and buried them in a common grave. Rebecca West said it was as if a hand had swept them all into a concrete drawer because they didn't want to make a shrine. And then in 1939, the Serbian Orthodox Church organized the building of this memorial chapel. Someone's come and stuck some beeswax candles of the kind you use in an Orthodox church in this little empty flower pot next to the grave. Princip was an atheist, and here he is in this chapel with a crucifix right over his name. That wouldn't have been what he would have liked or what he was fighting for. But here you feel that in 1939, Princip was being claimed by Serbian Orthodox as their hero before he later became a Yugoslav hero.
It takes 11 years to get a major official memorial.
And that plaque
is pretty anodyne. Quote, on this historic place, Gavrilo Princip proclaimed freedom on Vidovdan, June 28, 1914. And there's an outcry. Newspapers like Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung calls the plaque a monstrous provocation. The London Times says, how can you ignore the fact that this assassination is directly responsible for millions and millions of deaths? Churchill also lambasts Gavrilo Princip's, quote, fellow countrymen for erecting a memorial to, quote, his infamy and their own. Well, it's removed by ethnic Germans once the Nazis march into Sarajevo in April 1941, practically the day of the occupation.
Einmarsch in eine bosnische Stadt.
Ethnic Germans from Yugoslavia. You still have a large German community in parts of Yugoslavia. There's this bizarre film footage. They're wearing sort of white shirts and black ties.
In Sarajevo, hier wurde am 28. Juni 1914 der österreichische Thronfolger Erzherzog Franz Ferdinand durch das feige Attentat eines serbischen Studenten niedergestreckt. Diese Schüsse waren das Signal zum Weltkrieg.
During the war, the Völkische Beobachter, this is the mouthpiece of the Nazi propaganda, constructs the Sarajevo assassins as Jews and Freemasons. And there's actually an outcry from Serbia in response to this that says, no, no, they weren't Jews, they were Serbs, trying to sort of take pride in this.
He takes the Inschrift, an dieser historischen Stätte erkämpfte Gavrilo Princip Serbien die Freiheit. Der Führer überwies die Tafel dem Berliner Zeughaus.
And that plaque is sent to Berlin, where it's about the time of Hitler's birthday. So people often say that it was a gift to Hitler for his birthday, probably is destroyed in bombings that took place. And I've tried to track it down to no avail.
This is my father.
Yeah.
That's him with Tito.
Oh, yes, look, there's Tito.
Tito's partisans fought the Nazi occupiers in the Second World War and the fascist Croatian Ustasha who controlled Sarajevo and the royalist Serb Chetniks. Predrag Finci's parents met as partisans, but his Jewish grandparents were slaughtered by the genocidal Ustasha alongside some half a million Serbs and many thousands of Jews and Roma.
My father, he went to the house of his parents because he had a gun. No one was there. House was completely empty. And he found a message in Ladino. They came for us. We are going to the concentration camp. Please join us. He didn't believe because he was a rabbi. He didn't believe something will happen to him.
Most of them died in Croatia.
Yes.
Princip's nephew Slobodan fought and died with the partisans who liberated Sarajevo in April 1945. In May, a triumphant procession crossed the renamed Princip's Bridge to dedicate a new plaque to the fighters against the Germanic invaders. For Princip was now a national hero, a symbol of the brotherhood of all Yugoslav peoples.
We were all proud of any kind of revolution that happened in our history. So Gavrilo Princip, with many other medieval heroes, for example, just fit in as grandpa, let's say, of Tito's partisans. During the socialist period, they just reinterpreted the whole past back to the 7th century in a, let's say, Marxist socialist paradigm. So Gavrilo Princip came as a perfect hero, but of course not as a nationalist as he is understood today in Serbia. He was understood as a communist, anarchist, leftist.
And Yugoslavist?
And Yugoslavist, of course. So he was one of the heroes of my generation, and we were all proud very much that he assassinated that bloody emperor from the enemy. That was how we were brought up.
We shot whole movie in 11 days. It was like, I'll be something like celebrity because I will play someone very famous.
In 1968, Predrag Finci had decided to give up acting to become a philosopher when he was spotted in the drama school cafe by director Fadil Hadžić, who was about to make Yugoslavia's first Princip movie.
Director actually made the two stories. One is a story of partisan fighter who escapes Nazi soldiers. He comes to the flat of someone who was involved in assassination of Ferdinand, and he saw the photo of Princip on his desk.
Gavrilo Princip, imao sam 20 godina kad je počeo Prvi svjetski rat. Da nisi i ti pucao na Ferdinanda?
And this is how two stories are connected, like two resistant fighters, two different historical periods.
To je Austrija. Živjela ujedinjena Jugoslavija.
When we shot the first sequence, it was the assassination of Ferdinand, very difficult one. And you can imagine someone of no experience with a pistol in your hand, and I shoot him, and then director said, "What are you doing? You are not John Wayne." Actually, I didn't think that I am John Wayne. I believe that I am Gary Cooper. All of a sudden, I became a celebrity. You know, I was in all newspapers. And I also remember that old Serbian ladies who approached to me in Hotel Europe and said, "Ah, you are our Gavrilo, our Gavrilo."
By now, the site of the assassination was home to the Gavrilo Princip Museum, or shrine, in what had once been Moritz Schiller's delicatessen. Historian Paul Miller.
The museum is official in that a national committee is created, the mayor is there at the dedication, Nobel Prize winner of literature, Ivo Andrić, is there, a Belgrade University professor, Vaso Čubrilović, who was one of the seven assassins, is there for the dedication. There's articles written all over the newspapers about it. You know, the museum itself has a huge sculpted head of the assassin, and the plaque in front of the museum that replaces the 1945 plaque, so this makes it the third Yugoslav plaque, and this one has perhaps the strongest language in terms of a positive elevation of the assassins for all Yugoslavs, not just for Bosnians, which is the following. From this place on June 28, 1914, Gavrilo Princip's shot gave voice to the national protest against tyranny and our nation's centuries-long aspiration for freedom. End quote. Right in front of the plaque are placed footprints of the assassin, so to speak. They're not his real footprints, into the concrete. And lots of tourists like to stand inside the footprints and pretend like they're shooting a gun and have their picture taken.
Those footprints were obviously loved in Sarajevo. They made Princip an everyday imaginative presence, especially for children, like Maja Abdomerovic, now a curator at the Art Gallery of Bosnia and Herzegovina.
For us children, it was really fun to see how our foot is growing.
So when you're little, you put your foot in and it doesn't
fit. Yes, but for me, it was just like a playground. For me, it has not historical significance. After I grew up, I realized that it was a fantastic concept.
A piece of conceptual art.
Yes, by Voja Dimitrijević.
Dimitrijević was a state artist. He was very well established as an artist. And he was very well paid. I remember I went to his flat when I was a child to play with his son. Okay, we also had a big apartment, but they had much bigger than us. And the Braco Dimitrijević had such a wonderful toys, you know. He had a bicycle as well. And then we played that we are partisans. And only one chap accepted to be Chetnik. But he said, "I'm a motorized Chetnik, so bicycle is mine." So Mr. Dimitrijević, the old one, he was a very, very good painter, actually. But he also did many commission works, and it was also one of the sort, you know.
So who commissioned it?
I believe state.
So are those footprints a piece of art or a public monument?
It was a monument, actually.
It was a monument.
It was a monument.
He just invited everyone to go in Gavrilo's footsteps and decide, was Gavrilo a terrorist or a hero or just a young guy with ideals?
But slowly the unifying idea of Yugoslavia was being hollowed out. The rifts that Tito's socialist state had papered over were reopening.
We needed first Tito to die, and then the start of the Yugoslav crisis, which was a political and primarily economic crisis that started in 1980-1981. And then nationalism started to formulate nationalism by writers, by intellectuals, by church, by the Academy of Science, by the university. And then, 2 years after that, in 87, Milosevic came to power.
Oh, 1980s Yugoslavia hummed with dark energy. with nihilism and nationalism, thrash and punk. Nihad Kresaljakovic, now director of the Sarajevo War Theatre, started a band.
Before the war, I remember I was in secondary school, and that time me and my twin brother and friend of us, we had some punk band. So we were really discussing with our professors why we learn about this guy that he's a hero, you know. And she was explaining, you know, that we are, you know, we don't understand, blah, blah, blah. And the interesting thing, that the guy who played with us, and he was a Serb, I mean, I didn't know at that moment, I didn't care on the end, he shared our opinion. And when Attack on Dubrovnik started, I met the same guy, you know, and I said, okay, what do you think about Gavrilo Princip now? And he knew exactly what I'm asking him, because we were together talking about that guy as a terrorist. And he was silent for I don't know how many. And he said, but he's a part of my tradition. So in some way, discussion about Gavrilo Princip was one of the discussions which was very, very present as the intro into the wars.
In the new context of a dissolution of Yugoslavia and of the Bosnian War, he suddenly became a grandfather of Ratko Mladic. So previously he was a grandfather of Tito, and then he became a grandfather of Bosnian Serbs. So that was for the first time that in a history textbook there was a picture of Gavrilo Princip, and under the picture it was written, a Serbian hero. Textbooks were changed in 93, which is also extremely interesting, because in 93, first we had a war, and second we had sanctions and hyperinflation and the huge economic crisis. And the decision of the government to change history textbooks in the middle of that situation shows how history is a crucial political tool, in fact.
In the 2 days since the United Nations withdrew from the airport, we have watched as the Serbs, in effect, walked their mortar fire across Sarajevo and onto the old town. And then at lunchtime today, the dead and the injured had been taken away, the mortar bombs kept on falling.
Once, and I was returning with my father in car. Very particular memory, also because my father was the mayor of Sarajevo at that time. I remember it was end of the day, you know, it was dusk. We entered the street where the Ferdinand was assassinated, and we were going in directions towards the bridge because it was shelling, you know. So in that moment, one grenade hit just in the building of the museum. It was one of the closest grenades which hit near us, and I remember that we were impressed by a driver who was really very fast returning us in the street from where we came, much faster than the guy who drove the Ferdinand, and we stayed behind the corner waiting, you know. I remember that as one of the most dangerous situations during the war.
The main street in New Sarajevo this morning, one of the most active snipers' corners in the city. A group of civilians has been hit by sniper fire. Two of them are dead. Bosnian forces return fire.
In the early days of the siege, one person enacted a strange ritual, burning feathers in Gavrilo Princip's footprints. Soon after that, they were gone. Political scientist Adnan Huskic.
Truth be told, at the very beginning of the war in Sarajevo, one of the first things that happened here by the Bosniak nationalists was to remove the steps and, in a way, remove everything related to the place from which Gavrilo Princip was shooting. Something that was, at least as far as the history of Yugoslavia is concerned, was part of the sort of South Slavic freedom fighting. So,
can you explain how that happened?
It had to do with, even though we're fighting people who are shooting at us from the hills, right? There is a historical basis for it. So the guy who basically did this, right, 100 years ago, or in that case that was 80 years ago, that's the guy whose history we need to remove from our history, you know. So, and then he was basically rebranded in Sarajevo as a terrorist.
Even in this city, and even after all this time, no one would have believed a single explosion could take so much life. But it was the worst possible place at the worst possible time, a city center market at its midday busiest, and in an instant it became a human abattoir.
Because of the war, someone destroyed footsteps. Why? He knows. You can imagine when someone shoots you every day, every day, every day, every hour.
Amra Majarovic is now the director of the Sarajevo City Museums. The former Princip Museum has become the Museum of Sarajevo, 1878 to 1918. It's had a facelift for the centenary celebrations. It's wrapped in a huge banner bearing the faces of both Princip and the Archduke, and strangely emblazoned with the legend, the street corner that started the 20th century.
After the war, everything changed, you know. Balkan is still very hot. Yes. Our story now is really natural. Mm. As you can see, Gavrilo Princip is not terrorist, is not hero in our museum. He just shoot.
The fourth and probably final plaque to the assassination, unveiled in 2003, blandly records that from this place, on 28th June 1914, Gavrilo Princip assassinated the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, Franz Ferdinand, and his wife, Sophia.
Our role is just to show history, not to discuss about it.
As someone who works in the culture field, you must be quite involved with the various commemorations and celebrations that are happening. What do you make of it and how do you feel about it?
As far as I can see, it's more important for the European people than for us here, honestly. Yes. And that's why I repeat all the time, we here in Sarajevo, as a city museum, we want to stay really neutral and to talk, to show the history.
It's only 20 years since the war, so yes, there are still a lot of wounds, yes, in people's lives, yes, and also you can, yes, see it in the fabric of the city.
Of course.
Is there a way that this anniversary can help that?
For me and for people around me, it's irrelevant, really.
Irrelevant.
Yes, really. Because, for example, I lose my father. I lose one cousin of 13 years. So we cannot forget it. We cannot forget it. We live, of course. You have to live. We live normally. But nothing, even centenary, even Gavrilo Princip, Franz Ferdinand, nothing can change that point.
Oh, the wind is blowing, to the brave the wind is blowing, freedom soon will come.
There's almost nothing Sarajevo can do with Gavrilo Princip now. He only speaks of violence and the pain of war.
Black Hand is still alive. It's still alive in Balkans, and it's alive, as we can see, it was alive in the 90s during genocide which happened in Bosnia, Kosovo War, everything what has happened with former Yugoslavia.
But in Belgrade, it still seems possible to reclaim some part of his dream from the Serbian nationalism that led to genocide in the 1990s. Activist Andrei Nosov is the producer of Biljana Srbljanovic's play, This Grave is Too Small.
Guard your planes. Guard your colleges. Guard your banks. Guard your children. Guard your doors.
The play links Princip with modern radicals and the Black Hand with the dark elements in Serbia's security forces who assassinated reforming Prime Minister Zoran Djindjic in 2003.
This part of the world, this part of Balkans, we need some dream, because we cannot be just war criminals and terrorists. The reason why we are trying to reread young Bosnia is to give to those young people, to give to this society way to believe and to move forward, not just to stay in this analysis of what has happened in the past. It doesn't mean I'm saying that we should not take any responsibility for all of the wars, including genocide, but we deserve the chance to read our past outside of the nationalistic boxes. We need something what we may call our own path towards the future, you know, and that's the reason why understanding and speaking about Gavrilo Princip today in the Balkans is so important. The political idea of Yugoslavia is dead after all of those victims.
You think it's really dead?
Yugoslavia? It is. How I can go to Srebrenica and say, come together and be with me? You may do that in 30, 40 years, but people forget. As we forget what happened here during the fascism. Because we never spoke about that. Tito never spoke about that. We lost with Yugoslavia soul, and not just Serbia, because we don't have freedom to make choices.
I have changed my name so often. I have lost my wife and children, but I have many friends.
Of course, Gavrilo Princip is killer. There is no doubt about that. But 100 years ago, he was having a dream. So in this very complex understanding, we should divide the assassination of Ferdinand from the ideology and the idea of young Bosnia. We need to divide those two things.
Belgrade has never had a monument to Princip, and a plan to put one up this month was discreetly shelved. But in Republika Srpska, the Serb political entity of Bosnia and Herzegovina, the old irredentist Princip of the Serbian struggle lives. He's been symbolically retried and acquitted. His statue went up on the day of the anniversary in Serb East Sarajevo. Mayor Čošić insists this is not a provocation.
The putting of the statue of Gavrilo Princip doesn't present act against reconciliation. I have my own view of history. My citizens have their own view of history, and they see Gavrilo Princip as a revolutionist, as a hero. There is no need to agree about that. His act helped us to live together in one country. After 28th of June, after we cover it, after we put it, I hope, he's going to stand there for the next 100, 200 years. Don't forget, that happened. That happened in Sarajevo on Princip Bridge, very close to the city hall in Sarajevo. Okay, Sarajevo authorities doesn't want to have a monument of Gavrilo Princip. Why not? Let's talk about that. He killed Ferdinand in Sarajevo.
We didn't want to make an exhibition to support Gavrilo's act or to feel sorry for Ferdinand and Sofia.
In the National Art Gallery in Sarajevo, another piece of repressed history has returned. For decades, a surviving medallion from the Austro-Hungarian monument to Franz Ferdinand and Sophie gathered dust in the basement. Maja Abdomerovic has reframed it to imagine the assassination in a different way. The footprints used to put you in Gavrilo Princip's place. Her installation puts you in Franz Ferdinand's.
We just wanted to make not historical but pure artistic exhibition. It's like a movie. The idea is to ask people to make their own association, to feel this exhibition.
Here is a young woman turning with a bonnet on and she's raising her hand to her mouth. And there's a kind of collapse, which is the moment when Gavrilo Princip, who is absent really in this exhibition, fired his gun. And at the end of the room is the medallion from the enormous monument to the Archduke and Sophie that was put up in 1917. And here it's become an intimate grave piece, really. It takes it out of history and it makes it a story about a couple who were killed. It's a very interesting thing to do with what was initially conceived as a very political, imposing 12-meter-high monument to remind the people here of the terrible thing they'd done. Now, there's no judgment, there's just a kind of regret.
I suggest you nail me to a cross and burn me alive. My flaming body will be torched to light my people on their path to freedom and annihilation of those who are standing at the way of unity.
But it's impossible to take the politics out of Princip. In a Belgrade basement, Serbian-Sudanese singer Abdel Rahim Kirawi reclaims a Rasta Princip for the downtrodden with shotgun roots. And the cycle begins again.
Now, for the past 25 years, we've been suffering the bourgeois violence in the Balkans in forms of sometimes nationalist and sometimes liberal exploitation, depending upon which form the elite adopts in certain period. But if we, the people, refuse to follow and adopt the line of Princip, we still have a chance to break free.